Welcome back to Midpoint, friends, on this New Year's Eve day morning. Have you made your resolutions yet? Or are you one of those people who doesn't make resolutions because you always feel so guilty when you break them? I can relate to that. I'm your host, Shelley Reback, and in a few minutes, we'll be welcoming my guest, Mr. Florida Man himself, the inimitable Craig Pittman. He's joining us to share his reflections on this year in weirdness. But before we get to that, we've got to get your blood boiling on this very cold Florida day, so I am bringing you some news. As you know, the new Florida legislative session begins in January. And as I always say, it is the most dangerous time of the year in Florida, because that is when the legislators come back to Tallahassee, all fat and happy after their holiday break, and they begin to write new laws. And for the last 30 years or so of our Republican-controlled legislature, those new laws are generally designed to bring maximum pain, sometimes danger, and almost always, at least, all kinds of annoyances to the citizens of Florida. They usually start by figuring out new and different ways to take over things that previously were controlled by our local governments, like our tree canopy, or managing our growth and development. And lately, they've even wanted to manage our local municipalities' budgets. They also start making laws that invade our personal and most intimate lives and choices, like when they passed the 6-week abortion ban, for example, or told parents how or how not to make decisions about their transgender kids' medical care. In this vein, along comes the 2026 legislative session. And as Jason Garcia of Seeking Rents reports, Florida's Republican-controlled legislature may now turn husbands, fathers, and brothers into bounty hunters who can block women from ending unwanted pregnancies. A new bill filed in the Florida House of Representatives would dangle $100,000 prizes in front of private citizens who are willing to sue in order to stop a pregnant family member from obtaining abortion pills through the mail. Let me explain. New House Bill 663 would allow a pregnant woman's spouse, parents, or siblings to sue anyone who tries to send her abortion medication, including doctors who prescribe the pills, drug companies that make them, shipping companies that transport them, and even friends or other family members who help to arrange their delivery. A successful lawsuit would come with a $100,000 payout, plus extra cash to pay lawyers and legal fees. The Florida legislation is similar to a first-of-its-kind state law that just took effect in Texas. They now want to stop women from accessing abortion services remotely from states where it is still permitted through telehealth and in-home medication. Many abortion-supportive states around the country have in recent years enacted what are known as shield laws. These are laws that protect patients, doctors, and others involved in reproductive health from criminal prosecutions and from civil lawsuits brought under laws passed in anti-abortion states, just like the kind envisioned in House Bill 663. They also contain provisions that would allow the person being sued to try to claw back their expenses of defending themselves against these types of lawsuits. But the new Florida bill tries to weaken these other states' shield laws, too, by forbidding anyone who is sued under this provision, who then tries to sue in order to recover damages and recoup costs that they incurred in their legal defense, from doing so. Basically, that's Florida telling other states where abortion rights are honored that Florida will not recognize their laws that permit people who are sued in Florida from fighting back with clawback lawsuits. So this is another attack on Florida women by our Republican-controlled Florida legislature. Women are the real targets here, make no mistake. The ultimate goal of legislation like this is to scare providers out of sending abortion pills to women who want them. And make no mistake, this type of threat will definitely chill the rights of doctors, especially out-of-state doctors and others, from prescribing medication abortion to Florida women. And that's not all. This is the second major piece of anti-abortion legislation filed ahead of the legislative session, which starts in about 2 weeks. Republicans in the House and Senate are already advancing separate legislation, Senate Bill 164 and House Bill 289, that would grant a fertilized egg some of the same legal rights as a living human child. It's all part of a conservative legal strategy, ultimately aimed at enabling courts to completely ban all abortion under any circumstances and at any stage of pregnancy. As Jason Garcia points out in Seeking Rents, this is all happening just 1 year after 57% of Florida voters cast their ballots in support of an amendment that would have enshrined abortion rights into the state constitution and prohibited politicians in Tallahassee from interfering with women's access to abortion. That ballot measure ultimately fell just short of the 60% supermajority needed to amend Florida's constitution, in part because Governor Ron DeSantis spent millions of dollars in our taxpayer money on television commercials attacking the amendment. I commend to your attention the recent fine investigative reporting done by the Tampa Bay Times and Miami Herald on that very point, where the reporters concluded that the DeSantis administration spent well over the $10 million diverted in the Hope Florida scandal to pay for advertising propaganda directed at defeating the abortion rights amendment in Florida. Indeed, they now believe that at least $36 million was diverted for this purpose, mostly from child welfare budgets. Taking money away from needy kids to pay for their political agenda? Is anything more despicable? Well, if you are concerned about these new and even more dangerous legislative proposals pending in Tallahassee, you know what you have to do. The phone lines to our legislators will be open again on Monday, and I'm sure they need to hear from you. But right now, we need to hear from my guest, a notable Florida man and raconteur, an environmentalist, and a columnist for the Florida Phoenix Online, the author of Oh Florida and Welcome to Florida and other entertaining books, Craig Pittman. Welcome to Midpoint, Craig.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Oh, we got you on air. Craig is not in the studio, so hopefully our tech will stay with us throughout the rest of the show.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So, Craig, in terms of Florida weirdness, how did the year 2025 stack up?
You know, year after year, I'm amazed by the many ways Florida finds to be weird, much weirder than any other state, and this year was no exception. The theme this year for a lot of stories involved costumes, and probably the best example of that was the guy in Tallahassee who was working at Chuck E. Cheese when he got arrested for credit card fraud, and the cops who arrested him while he was dressed as Chuck E. Cheese.
Was his mugshot, huh? Chuck E. Cheese.
Well, I don't think they did that for the mugshot, but lots of people took pictures of him being escorted out of the restaurant with his hands cuffed behind his back.
That's
and
a
now,
good
whether
one.
Anybody yelled, "You dirty rat," I don't think that happened.
Uh-huh. You dirty rat. Hey, you know, Craig, if someone was to look you up on Wikipedia, they would learn that Craig Pittman was a former United States Marine and professional wrestler.
Yeah, that's not me. That's the other Craig.
that's not Craig, right?
Craig Pitbull Pittman.
So, you didn't wrestle professionally as Sergeant Craig Pitbull Pittman in the World Championship Wrestling? Do you ever get confused with that guy?
Occasionally, although I have yet to get any, credit card offers or anything like that for him. But.
Well, that would have been nice. I think he was an African-American gentleman, too.
Later, I believe, became a Hillsborough County deputy.
A Hillsborough County Sheriff's deputy, yeah. I think so. But that's not you, right? So it wasn't you arresting Chuck E. Cheese that day, was it?
No. That was the Tallahassee Police Department.
Okay.
They deal with it. You know, Tallahassee, you're dealing with a lot of clowns anyway. So.
Oh, tell me about it. But they're dangerous clowns, as I try to point out at every opportunity. They're very dangerous clowns.
Now, some of the other costumes that popped up this past year, we had a woman in St. Petersburg who got arrested for vandalizing a neighbor's car with toilet paper while she was dressed as a hot dog. The police report doesn't explain why she was dressed as a hot dog. But
was it Halloween?
No, but apparently she, you know, she was committing the crime with relish. So,
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Those are some good costume stories from Florida.
Oh, yeah.
We've had a lot of arrests, though, of people in various states of undress. And so this is a new trend of being arrested in costume.
There was not nearly as much nudity this year as there have been in previous years. And there was not as much, how can I put this? There was not as many surprises in people's cars as there had been in previous years. 2019 is remembered as
interruptions of intimate activity. Let's say that,
not just that, but there was a woman arrested because she had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles backpack containing actual turtles that she was smuggling, and when the cops arrested her, they said, "Do you have anything else?" And she pulled an alligator out of her yoga pants.
Oh my God!
So that was 2019. That was the year of the yoga pants. But Dave Barry and Carl Hyacin actually collaborated to write a song about.
They wrote a song about it.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Look it up. It's worth hearing.
Well, you know, you've written that a lot of the wacky Florida man and Florida woman stories that you see are also Florida Gator stories. Did we have any wacky Gator stories in Florida this year?
Two in particular that stood out. One was that two people on motorcycles traveling on I-4 around the same time, both of them hit the same alligator and were thrown off their motorcycles. So that was one gator story. The even better gator story was the discovery that, yes, indeed, alligators are in the sewers of a major American city, but it's not New York City, it's Gainesville.
Oh.
They actually ran cameras down there and discovered there were quite a few animals living in the sewer system, including alligators. And I mean, where better to have gators than in Gainesville, right?
Oh my God. That's, you know, I read an article about these massive floods that the Pacific Northwest was getting, and a warning that I think it might have been in Seattle that the municipality put out telling people to beware of toilet rats. That the flooding was so extensive that rats were being sucked into the sewers and coming up out of the toilets. Now, that is going to give me nightmares. That has been giving me nightmares since I read it.
In Florida, the real toilet danger is from iguanas.
Iguanas in the toilets.
Iguanas in the toilet. Yeah, there have been a number of instances over the past years where people go to the bathroom at say 3 a.m. suddenly discover there's something thrashing around
Lord.
And not the way you want to wake up, believe me.
Oh my God.
And of course the first human instinct is to try and flush it and make it go down, and that does not work. You actually have to call a trapper to come get it.
Oh really? Because in the Seattle story about toilet rats that I saw, the first line of defense the municipality told their citizens was to try and flush it. And if that didn't work, they had to tell people this, close the toilet seat and call an exterminator. Like,
yeah,
in useless directions. that's what they told them. Hey, listeners, if you've got a wacky Florida news story to share, please give us a call at 813-239-9663, and we'll try and get your wacky Florida story on the show. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. If it's a good one, Craig might even steal it and put it in his next book, right, Craig?
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is, Florida is the gift that keeps on giving for storytellers. I mean, Carl Hyacin always says he doesn't make up anything, he just changes the names.
Oh, really? You know?
Yeah.
Well, what else have we gotten, you were an environmental reporter for the Tampa Bay Times for many, many years before embarking on your independent writing career. So how did 2025 stack up in terms of the environment?
Florida Phoenix. I write about the environment for the Florida Phoenix. I write a weekly column about it for them.
Yes, I've seen that. Now, how did 2025 stack up in Florida in terms of the environment?
Well, it was up and down. I mean, on the one hand, you know, the legislature passed a law that says the governor cannot build golf courses in state parks. So, I mean, why would you need to do that? There's no such law in any of the other states. Florida's the only state where we had to do that.
Yeah, it's one of those pregnant pig type laws, isn't it? Where you think that no one else would worry about this. But it was the state of Florida.
You know, we've had two governors in a row that tried to do this, that tried to put golf courses in the state parks, first Rick Scott and then Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, now, I rag on Florida legislators all the time, but that is one law that I have to give them credit for.
Well, I mean, and because DeSantis, when this proposal came out to put the golf courses in there, people went bananas. People from both parties turned out in force to say, don't you dare. They really value the state parks, and our state park systems are our state park system is a real wonder. It's won 4 national awards. It's a major economic driver for a lot of places, and people feel a real ownership, the sense of ownership for the park that they treasure the most. I went to a public hearing several years ago where there was a proposal to make changes to Honeymoon Island State Park, and I'd say 1,000 people turned out to that hearing in Dunedin.
Yeah.
And 999 of them were opposed to the change.
Yeah, yeah. But despite that, in another example of the Republican-controlled legislature and DeSantis, his administration ignoring what the people want, not giving the people what they want, didn't DeSantis last year veto money in the budget for maintenance and repairs and things like that for the state parks that need to be maintained on a regular basis?
I don't recall that, but the big veto he did make was a veto for a new study on the Rodman Dam. That was preparatory to removing the dam. It's the oldest environmental fight in Florida, and they had finally gotten to the point of getting the legislature on board to say, we need to do a study to say that removing the dam is a good thing, and he vetoed the money for the study. He also, of course, the big issue this past year, he built a concentration camp in the Everglades.
Yeah.
Without doing any environmental studies at all to say this is a good idea or a bad idea. I mean, of course, it's a bad idea.
And we've been following that lawsuit about it. There was a temporary injunction granted. Well, I mean, on the environmental issue, on the fact that they didn't do any environmental impact studies before they erected this camp, concentration camp, alligator Alcatraz, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a temporary injunction granted, and then it was appealed, and I think they lifted it. They lifted the injunction
lifted the injunction. So the camp staff had been in the process of evacuating it, and then they all came back. So it's out there and still cranking along, and I'm hopeful that the people who are fighting this. Friends of the Everglades, the Miccosukee tribe of Indians,
yeah,
and others will succeed in defeating it. The other big...
But in the meantime, though, let me just go back to that for a second. In the meantime, though, there's like thousands of yards of concrete that they've poured into that facility that, they were originally told to remove it, but now they're continuing to expand it.
The biggest concerns out there are the lights, because the lights are on 24 hours a day, and in what was a dark sky part of Florida. And a lot of the wildlife that lives out there, the panthers and so forth, they depend on nighttime to do their movement and their predation. But also the pollution that's being spread out there through the sewage and so forth. The other big environmental event that happened in Florida in 2025 was the bear hunt.
Right. The bear hunt was revived. The Florida Wildlife Agencies, they claim they don't really have to follow the science on that, right? And you've written, the bear kill runs counter to science, but it seems like the Wildlife Commission doesn't care.
They don't. And those are all appointees of DeSantis. In fact, right before the vote, one of them resigned, and he quickly jumped in to appoint someone else who would vote for the bear hunt. I mean, it was quite amazing to see how quickly he plugged someone in there when he's been very, very sluggish about appointing people to other positions, empty legislative seats and so forth. But
there's a reason for that.
Yeah, exactly. But 10 years ago, before the last hunt, the population of bears was 4,000. The population this year, 4,000. So it's not like a growing problem. It's a made-up problem. And when the groups like Bear Warriors United went to court to challenge the decision, their argument was, Judge, we don't have to follow science. And the judge said, you know what? That's what the law says. The law says they don't have to follow science.
Wow.
So even though it's a good idea, they're not required to do it.
So, you know, one of the things that struck me was up until yesterday, just yesterday, the administration was refusing to tell the public how many bears were killed in this newly revived bear hunt. They finally yesterday disclosed that 52 bears were killed, which is terrible. But on the other hand, it's kind of a victory for the opponents of the bear hunt, isn't it? Because the state issued 172 permits, which they claimed they came up with that number based on some sort of equation that they figured out that was necessary to control the population. And they issued 172 permits, but so many citizens applied for permits intending not to use them to hunt bears that only 52 bears were killed in the end, right?
That's the official number. Now, whether there were some that were poached along the way, we don't know.
Oh, good point.
Some hunters had actually said, well, I've got a tag to use, but I'm not going to use it until I get my third bear.
Oh, wow.
Who knows if they went ahead and killed more than they were allowed to. But because that part of the problem was, unlike 10 years ago, they weren't required to bring the killed bears to a public check-in station.
Oh.
So you could actually see the bears that they were bringing in. This time, the Wildlife Commission was supposed to send inspectors out to the hunters to see what they got, and they wouldn't go out unless they were called. So who knows? But yeah, they were refusing to release any numbers until finally they released them yesterday. And any bear mortality that goes beyond the natural kind is bad. I mean, we kill 300 bears a year with cars, so that's already a pretty bad predation number.
Wow.
But then an additional 52 on top of that, not good. And so we have yet to hear exactly where they were killed and whether that will have any impact on the populations there. Because some of these populations, the one that's classified as Osceola up in the north end of Florida, was already in kind of a kind of on the bubble as to whether they could withstand any hunting there. And so, and they went ahead and did it anyway. So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, you know, we'll be following that issue of the bear hunt. It's ended now, though, just so you know, listeners, the bear hunt is officially ended. Nobody can hunt bears, at least for the next until they renew the permission. But right now, it's ended.
But here's the thing: is the law, the rules that they passed say that the next bear hunt doesn't have to go to the Wildlife Commission. The Wildlife Commission's executive director can do it on his own.
Oh.
So it's like they're saying, we don't want to hear from the public anymore.
Wow.
We just want to tell the executive director, you set up the next hunt and you set the rules and we're okay with whatever you do, which is crazy.
It is crazy, but it seems like the only way to inhibit or stop the bear hunt is for masses of people to apply for permits, because it's a lottery, right? It's a lottery as to who gets a permit to kill a bear. And so if masses of people bought tickets or entries into the bear hunt lottery with the intention of not killing a bear, we've seen this year how that seems to have worked to some extent. Because only 52 52 bears were killed out of 172. So it seems like there were a number of people who received permits who didn't use them.
And several donors put money aside and paid to pay the people who, the hunters who received tickets, but they needed the money. They said, we'll buy your
tickets. Permit. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were offering like $2,000 to hunters to buy their permit so that hunter wouldn't hunt bears, you know.
Yeah. So that may have further cut back the number that were killed, but you know, we don't know.
We really don't know.
It sure would be nice though if the Wildlife Commission obeyed the spirit of the Sunshine Law and fully disclosed what was going on, but they kept their trap shut.
Well, what else is new from Florida, right? What else is new? Hey, you know, we've asked our listeners to call in or email us with any wacky or unusual Florida stories from the year 2025. And I've got Sandy, who sent in an email reminding us that in today's times, at page 20, there's a story that you might be interested in, Craig. It says, a Florida man has been accused of robbing a meat shop while naked, wearing just a face mask at the time, police said. Officers with the Lake City Police Department were called to BJ's Meat Market on Main Street on the night of December 23rd to investigate reports of a robbery. And when they arrived on the scene around 8:50 p.m., workers at the store told them a suspect, later identified as 24-year-old Kobe Watkins, burst into the store while, except for a covering over his face, wearing nothing except a covering over his face. All right, there you go, Craig.
That's identifiable, I guess.
Yeah, there's a Florida man story for you. Thank you, Sandy. And if anybody else out there has any good Florida man or Florida women stories, give us a call at 813-239-9663. We'd love to hear it from you directly. Or you can send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. You know, Craig, there's something that I've got to know. Why is it always Florida man? It's almost never Florida woman.
Oh, I disagree. Florida women contribute a lot. In fact, in my book, Oh Florida, I argued that the person who started the whole Florida man phenomenon was a Florida woman.
Oh, really?
Yes, specifically Catherine Herron, who was the Florida Secretary of State during
Bush versus
election
Gore,
debacle.
Yeah.
Yes, because number one, she wanted that job because she thought it was like U.S. Secretary of State, where she would jet around the world to different countries representing Florida. And no, that's not what you do. But then she had no familiarity whatsoever with the election laws. So, you know, to drop this huge problem in her lap, she didn't know what she was doing. So she was frequently saying these really crazy things on live TV about the vote counts. And
you know, the other thing, I don't like to, you know, comment on women's looks too much, but it strikes me that she had the MAGA face before MAGA face was a thing. Do you remember her?
Could be. I mean, now they're calling it Mar-a-Lago face.
Okay, Mar-a-Lago face.
The plastic surgeons are calling it. Yeah,
right.
And they're where they don't. The concern is no longer to look natural. The concern is to look camera ready. And that's the way I've seen it described. So think Kimberly Guilfoyle and others like her. That, you know, you can tell you can. The uncanny valley has been entered. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, she was very heavily made up, if I remember correctly. I was around during Bush versus Gore. I was following that. We'd see her on TV or on the steps of the Florida Supreme Court in Tallahassee. And she was just so heavily made up. I remember that they parodied her on Saturday Night Live. And
So she's the one where the people looking at Florida started thinking something's going on down there. There's something in the water. and 2001 is when you first started seeing the initial Florida man stories pop up on places like FARC.com. Florida is the only state that has its own special tag on FARC, which is a repository of weird stories.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's when they started, was right after the election debacle. So that's why I credit Catherine Harris.
Okay.
Started it all.
All right. Well, going back to our wacky stories, which you have pointed out are often also gator stories.
Yeah.
You know, I've noticed that you've written that gators have some amazing healing powers that scientists are trying to isolate so they can be applied to humans. So they're not just like major predators here in Florida. They might actually have some use, right?
Well, yeah, and the amazing thing too is they were once considered an endangered species, and now they've recovered to the point where basically any body of water that's bigger than a mud puddle probably has a gator in it. So they've had a huge comeback to the point now where we actually have, the state has a program where they'll send a trapper out to capture the gator if it gets too close to a school or gobbles up somebody's yip dog. And they call this the Statewide Nuisance Alligator Program, or SNAP for short. So whenever people claim that bureaucrats don't have a sense of humor, I always tell them about the SNAP program.
But
gators have these substances in their bloodstream called peptides that enable them to fight off infections. And a lot of the water they live in is not exactly healthy water, but they fight off, they are able to survive all of that. And so now scientists have been working with the San Augustine Alligator Park to isolate those peptides and see if there's a way they can use that and turn it into something to help humans survive infections as well. So, it's something where we should be grateful to the gators and grateful to the Endangered Species Act for saving them.
Well, but recently the Trump administration has proposed some major rollbacks for both the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act. I know they've been proposed. I don't know if they've been acted upon yet. You know, he issues all these executive orders, you know, day after day after day, which often don't have the force of law and can't be implemented. No. But I'm not sure what he's done with the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act. But, you know, either way, rolling back those two pieces of legislation has got to be a problem for the gators, right?
Well, and for us humans, too. I mean, Clean Water Act, I mean, that protects us, protects our drinking water. And if you roll that back, that makes it easier to pollute the water, which, you know, we're running out of clean water in Florida. We don't want to pollute what's left, do we? Or have some big company sucking it up and leaving us without. So the idea of messing up these things that are important for human life strikes me as very you know, they claim to be pro-life. It doesn't strike me as being very pro-life if you're going to make it okay for polluting the water system and getting rid of important wildlife that can help humans. That's just crazy to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know some of the best gator stories came in past years, but have you got any more for us? I mean, like, what about the guy who traded gator for beer?
trading a gator for a beer. Well, I mean, the ultimate one was 2018 with the guy who thought it would be a funny joke if he caught a 3-foot alligator and drove up to the Wendy's.
Yeah.
And then tossed it through the drive-thru window.
Florida man.
It scared the drive-thru clerk so badly, she jumped out the window that the gator had been thrown in through. He sort of became a classic Florida man character as a result. One of the most startling wildlife stories of the year involved iguanas. We were talking about iguanas before.
Yeah.
In Cape Coral, people in this one area, there had been a bank that had gone out of business. And then one day the facade of the bank crumbled. And that's how people found out that the building had been taken over by iguanas.
Oh my God.
There were like 40 or 50 of them in there, and they had undermined the structural integrity of the building to the point where...
What did they eat? Wood and, or like, termites or something?
They were tunneling through there because they have very strong claws. And they were, you know, clawing away, and it just fell apart. I mean, they're an invasive species, but they've been in Florida since the 1960s when people thought they were cute.
With today's temperature... We would, you know, I know in South Florida, we'd be seeing these iguanas falling from trees, right?
Yes.
Falling iguanas.
The Miami TV stations routinely put out falling iguana warning whenever the temperature dips, because they're cold-blooded creatures. The best falling iguana story of all, I always tell this, and I've heard Dave Barry tell it too, where it was a guy in the Keys, I think he was in Marathon, and driving down the road, going home. Turns a corner and sees an oak tree, and at the bottom of the tree, about 40 iguanas lying on the ground, comatose because it was too cold. So, of course, his first thought was barbecue. So he pulls over and starts gathering up the iguanas in his arms like cordwood, and put him in his car, and then takes off for home. And he didn't think this through because he had the heater on in the car.
And yeah, they're not iguanas. Dead when they fall, right?
No,
they're not dead. They're
they're
comatose.
And so when they warmed up, they started running around inside the car, which led to him driving off the road and wrecking the car, and I think he ended up having leftovers for dinner.
Wow. Well, we're talking to my guest, Craig Pittman. The inimitable Craig Pittman, Mr. Florida Man himself, who's a columnist for the Florida Phoenix online, he's got a weekly column there on environmental issues. And he's talking with us today about the year in weirdness in Florida. And if you've got a Florida news story to share, give us a call at 813-239-9663, or you can email dj@wmnf.org. And if it's a good one, Craig might even put it in his next book. I've got Florida man DeAndre from Brandon on the line who's got something to say. Let me bring him into the conversation. Okay, you're on the air, DeAndre. What's your Florida man story?
Well, good morning. They're not necessarily simply from this passing year. That's where I'm kind of stuck. But, I try to be quick with just three little tidbits. Like, one, during COVID, there were, like, orcas sighted off of Anklo. And, like, that to me was, like, them asking, hey, what's going on? Are you guys okay?
Orcas? Orcas? The whales?
They looked to be orcas from what footage could be procured at that moment. Thank goodness for smartphones in that instance, right?
Well, you know, that reminds me that yesterday's news in the Tampa Bay Times, there was a big feature about two charter fishermen, captains who do fishing charters and sightseeing charters off Honeymoon Island spotting a great white shark.
Right on.
That was just yesterday. They found a great white shark swimming near Honeymoon Island.
Creepy.
Yeah.
And they're right now, for what I understand, really like touring the seas more, I think, a little than they would otherwise normally be. But another one, again, I'm sorry, it's not necessarily from last year, is that the keys, like the coral, very, very sacred, very fragile. They got upwards of like 100 degrees down, like 100 feet below the sea surface. Those things, I don't know, to me, especially the Gulf reaching, gosh, 90 last year.
And then we're not allowed to talk about climate change here in Florida.
Right.
That's verboten. Taboo. Yeah,
too bad that doesn't make it stop, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you just stop people from talking about it, thinking about it, you know, it'll just go away, right? That seems to be the modus operandi of the Florida legislature and the DeSantis administration.
We have to vote the other way, the more secure way for Florida's future. But there's more, but I won't burden you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, DeAndre. Hey, listen, Happy New Year. It is New Year's tonight. So have a happy, healthy New Year.
You too, everyone. Yes, please. But just stay focused and stay charged for a better tomorrow, please.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much.
Bye. So they talk to some shark experts. I saw in the Tampa Bay Times yesterday, they talked to some shark experts who reviewed their camera footage, who said, yeah, could definitely be a great white shark because they come to Florida waters in the winter to stay warm. It's just unusual to have seen one so close to shore, I think was what they ultimately said.
Fish just swim in the water. What can I say?
Yeah.
But I have to mention, though, that the whale thing he mentioned, we do have sperm whales visit frequently, but we actually, in recent years, there was a discovery that there is a type of whale, the Rice's whale, that lives full-time in the Gulf of Mexico, and the BP oil spill was really bad for them. It cut their population. They think there's about 50 of them left.
Yeah, they're endangered, right?
Yeah, there's only about
50, and they're on their way to extinction. And now, of course, the Trump administration wants to expand oil drilling in the Gulf.
Right. But without the protections that were imposed after the BP oil spill, it rolled those back. So it's a really bad idea. And to their credit, a lot of Republicans in Florida have said, basically, are you crazy? You can't do that.
Well, they're worried about the tourist industry.
Sure.
You know,
see, that's the thing I tell people is, in Florida, the environment is the economy. If you screw up one, you're going to screw up the other. So take care of the environment, and that'll help us to continue to be able to live here.
Yeah, tar balls rolling up on the beach at spring break is
not a good look for Florida.
Yeah.
Before I forget, let me just mention that my roundup of the year in weirdness in Florida was published by Flamingo Magazine, which is a wonderful magazine. They recently ran my feature story on the artist Christopher Still, who lives up in Tarpon Springs. And they do, it's the state's only statewide culture and history magazine. So I encourage people to sign up for Flamingo. It's a terrific publication.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, while we've been talking, I noticed we talked a bit before about the woman who pulled an alligator out of her pants during a traffic stop.
Yeah. Yoga pants, not just regular pants.
Well, they'd have to be yoga pants. They stretch, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
But, like, where in the yoga pants was the alligator? That's something I just...
The front.
I really... Yeah, that's... Okay.
not
something I want to dwell on, but I did find...
It was not in her pocket.
It was not in her pocket. Is there an alligator in your pants, or are you just happy to see me?
See, that's when you want to say, see you later, alligator.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that Dave Barry and Carl Hyacin wrote a song. I found the song. It's She Had Turtles in Her Trunk and a Reptile in Her Pants. Because that was the turtle smuggling woman, too. She had turtles in her trunk and a reptile in her pants. It's probably got a little twangy country kind of thing to it. I don't know. It does.
It's actually performed by the Rock Bottom Remainders, which is this group of famous authors who get together from time to time for charity causes. And Dave Barry's kind of the ringleader of the bunch. Tim Dorsey used to play with him pretty regularly. I think Scott Turow plays with him, Amy Tan.
Yeah.
Other like
Stephen
that.
King, too, right?
Stephen King, that's correct.
Stephen King, Amy Tan. Yeah, yeah. They're still out there. I've got a comment here from Farah, who says, mm-hmm. My mother worked for social services in Palm Beach County, and she always said that all the nuts in America roll downhill and end up in Florida.
Oh, absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I used to work, there was a researcher I worked with at the Times, and her phrase that she used frequently was, Florida is the drain pipe of America.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was a perfect description. And I guess, you know, think about it. For years, people come here trying to get away from whatever they screwed up before in the northern states. And generally, when they get here, they repeat the same mistakes that they committed before. My best example is Charles Ponzi, the guy who invented the Ponzi scheme up in Boston. While he was out on bail awaiting trial for that, he came to Florida and got involved in a land fraud case.
That is not unusual. That is not unusual.
No.
In my criminal defense days, I made a lot of money off people who came to Florida to commit a scam. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I mean,
come on vacation, leave on probation.
Yeah, come on vacation, leave on probation. Right. That's the phrase. That's right. Exactly. Well, you know, we have so Florida is the capital. I understand. Well, according to the former Department of Justice, when they had reliable Department of Justice. Florida was the capital of things like Medicaid fraud. I mean,
yeah.
There was I mean, it's understandable. We have a lot of old people
who made money off that.
What?
We elected a senator who was famous for running.
There you go. Put that in your way.
Involved in Medicaid fraud. Yeah,
they have elevated Rick Scott now to be the chair of the Republican caucus in Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. He was himself never charged, never convicted of Medicaid fraud. And yet his company had to pay millions and millions and millions of dollars.
The largest fine up to that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, all right. Let me bring in Mary from Dunedin real quick. Mary, very quickly. You're on the
air.
Real
quickly. First Florida man is DeSantos, who put the vote against pot signs on the courthouse yard during the last election. But before that, or recently, a Florida man robbed my sister and I of our debit cards, used them, and we turned them in, had them turned off, and he was caught with them in his pocket just a few days later.
So they found him with your debit cards?
Yeah. And he gave them his wrong name. He's an unregistered sex offender. He had cocaine and crack and paraphernalia and a disabled female with him walking down the street.
Wow.
With them in his pocket. Now, Florida man, knowing they're turned in and turned off because he's still trying to use them, Still carrying them.
All right. Well, thanks for that. That's certainly a Florida man story. I appreciate your call, Mary. Thanks for calling in. Hey, you know, I have a Florida boy story. Years ago, my son tried to buy beer with a fake ID. And when the guy at the convenience store asked him for an ID, he produced his real ID and the fake ID at the same time. that was his last. I told him, I mean, like, man, you failed at criming. You need to find another path in life.
That's the thing.
And he did.
A lot of these folks are just unclear on the concept.
Right. You're just bad at criming.
Fake idea if you give them the real one.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. I couldn't believe how stupid it was. Stupid to try it, first of all, and then even more stupid to fail at it, you know? All right. Well, give us your last words of wackiness wisdom, Craig, before we have to go. Anything we haven't covered?
I guess the other thing I would say is, you know, we always laugh about the Florida man stuff and Florida woman, but many Florida men and women have done wonderful things that have helped our lives. Ray Charles learned to play the piano in Florida. Nat Reed, a Florida man from Jupiter, co-wrote the Endangered Species Act. John Adanasoff from Mulberry invented the personal computer. So, you know, how poor would our lives be without the contributions of those Florida men helping us out? So don't just laugh about Florida man. Respect Florida and let your freak flag fly, because that creativity is what sparked a lot of the things that wound up helping people too.
Right. And if Florida men and Florida women were not so bad at criming, we wouldn't have all these wacky stories to review at year's end.
There was actually a study. You know who consumes the most Florida man stories?
What's that?
Florida people.
Florida people. Of course.
We're the ones who read the stories because we love to laugh at ourselves, which I think is a pretty good thing.
Yeah, that's a pretty good, healthy thing. It really is. Okay, I've got one real quick call I'm going to try and fit in before we have to end. All right, John and Lutz, very quickly, what's your Florida man story?
I just wondered if y'all see the Facebook reels by the guy that has got the WWFD, What Would Florida Do shirt. He always starts off by saying,
is that LMG at Wix?
Only in Florida. I'm just glad I got it on my flip phone.
Oh, yeah. Wix, right?
OMG, it's Wix. Yeah,
OMG, it's Wix.
He's a Florida native, too.
Yeah.
He's from Southwest Florida. But he's hilarious. And
he is. I've seen him, too.
I do a podcast called Welcome to Florida, or WTF for short. And we had him on there as a guest. He was great. So, yeah, all power to OMG at Wix.
Thanks for reminding us of him. Thank you, John, from Lutz. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, he's really funny. I see his reels. I'm just glad I got it on my flip phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
As he likes to call it, that's some high-level Floriding.
Right. Yeah, and he talks about the pub subs. He's like always eating a pub sub in Florida, and the
bugs and the weather and all kinds of stuff like that. No, he's great.
Right.
And I'm a big fan.
Yeah, OMG, it's Wix. Yeah. All right, Craig, well, we've got to pretty much wrap it up. I've got just a couple minutes left, and I wanted to make sure to wish everybody a very, very happy, healthy, prosperous, if you need it, New Year's. Any New Year's wishes for Florida coming up?
I wish people would understand how important water is, clean water is, and do everything they can to make sure that it stays clean, because right now we have the number one polluted lake in America, Lake Okeechobee, and the most polluted lakes and estuaries as well. So I think that should be a much bigger issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, we're losing our manatees in the Indian River Lagoon due to pollution, right?
Yeah.
And exactly. Also, just like the potential for oil spills would ruin our beaches, we have so much red tide from all the nitrates, right, being poured into the Gulf.
Yeah.
That's a big environmental problem, too. So we need everybody to become environmental activists in the next year, in 2026. That's the point, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Do what we can to protect the natural wonders of Florida.
Which are pretty amazing.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank our own Mr. Florida, Craig Pittman, weekly columnist in the Florida Phoenix online. And you can find his books, Oh Florida and Welcome to Florida, and others. Thanks for being with us, Craig, on this New Year's Eve day morning. I also want to thank Jessica Green for keeping us on the air and in your ears, and our phone answerer, Barbara Fling. And as always, thanks to you out in listener land for sticking with us this year and every year. From all of us at your community radio station, WMNF Tampa, and we're out.